written again to Hawthorne about 2 days later. And he writes, "Your letter was handed me last night on the road going to Mr. Morley's, and I read it there. Had I been at home, I would have sat down at once and answered it. In me, divine magnanimity are spontaneous and instantaneous. Catch them while you can. The world goes round and the other side comes up. So now I can't write what I thought. But I felt pantheistic then. Your heart beat in mine, and mine in yours, and both in God's. A sense of unspeakable security is in me this moment on account of your having understood the book. I've written a wicked book, and I feel spotless as the lamb. Ineffable sociologies are in me. I would sit down and dine with you and with all the gods and all the Roman pantheon. It's a strange feeling. No hopelessness in it, no despair. Content, that is it. And irresponsibility, but without licentious inclination. And I speak now of my profounder sense of being, not of an incidental feeling." And this, of course, as you may hear, is just a watermark on the page and the fabric of high quality reality, stretching that work. Someone who has seen through the form to its importance. Someone who is going to use it. Someone who, like in the words of Pythagoras, realizes that, yes, geometry is history. And to read the progression of the form is to read the movement of eternity and time itself. And Melville here is only sequence of letters. You see the development. I thought that was an interesting perspective on Moby Dick, and one which you would certainly have a chance to never get to. And I hope that it gives you a little bit of background on that. I want to go over the Hopi ceremony material with you, but let's take a little break and then we'll get to that, and then I have some other things I want to share with you. Let's take a break for 10 minutes. And we had two persons doing Wu Qing. We had three doing Sayao. We had three doing Palamo, and Justine Moore is back, and Faith Moore. But she's not going to be coming, is that right? Charlie Hoff. I think a word of explanation here. What is being done is something which, here is something which is very difficult to perceive having just one experience in this sequence of series, or two, or three. The process that we're involved in is radically different from the kind of thing where you take an experience and you start on page one of that experience and you follow through in sort of a straight line to the end. We're doing something else. We are seemingly jumping around, but we're doing that jumping to stimulate our curiosity, to stimulate our inner insight into coming into operation, and to quiet down all of the associative qualities of mind which we're required to use in our working, waking, family lives, which would be a detriment to our involvement in this kind of a process. It is just those picayune qualities that get us through the day in terms of work, family, and so forth, that would blind us to the kinds of life which we are seeking to observe. And of course, like this. And so I jump around and I move around and I bring material in and try to put it out in such a way that there is no quality of second guessing available to that mundane mind. And so if resolution about the second or third or fourth week is that this is chaos, and that's good, that's the place you want to have that mind at, because it's only then that that mind will shut up and listen and learn. It's only then that the associate mind becomes a tool for some other quality of presence, which loves the suspended realm of meaning. There is that quality in ourselves, like Ishmael, which is at home on the ocean. Doesn't need the land, doesn't need the shoreline, doesn't need the pleasant map ridge at all. Rather loves the universe as it is. And is at home. So the jumping around with material, the using of different kinds of material to augment in ways that would not have occurred to you naturally, any of you. And I have to go pretty far afield because you're a very sophisticated group. I have to get combinations of things that would have required an unbelievable background to have mastered all of them so that all this would be old hat to you. And my hardest thing is to find perspectives that will be new, will be totally unfamiliar, that you'll have to address from scratch and build a relationship to patiently through actual experience and fumbling. And only then will there be something memorable. Remember the old art of memory? You have to have a theater of mind to be able to have a performance of the art of memory. On the Book of Hopi, and the reason for using the Book of Hopi and the way that we're doing, is to forestall reading it as an anthropological document, to forestall reading it as some kind of an entertainment or fiction. And so we have portioned out the ceremonial year, all those cycles, all those ceremonies that during 1 year journey would be performed by that sun. We portioned out each one of those ceremonies to different people and have encouraged you to study and read and absorb only that ceremony that you're looking for. You can understand it as deeply as you want, or you can just, if you have limited time, just read the section in the Book of Hopi. It can't be much more than 15 to 20 pages. Hopefully you'll become curious and you'll read some of the introductory material. Who are the Hopi? Or even more primordially, who are Indians? Or perhaps, and hopefully sometime next year and a couple of years, it'll occur to you that you can ask that question, what is the nature of spiritual being that it should manifest itself this way in a wilderness? Questions like that. You can find pretty fun in this thing. But the important thing is that if you study only that ceremony, you're going to be curious, because you know that it fits in a larger pattern. What is that larger pattern? And so near the end of this particular course of events, we will have all those people who have been doing this various ceremonies come in and recount in their own words what that ceremony is. And as we go along through the couple of hours it'll take to recount all those ceremonies, the way in which they fit in will emerge right then and there before your eyes. And the work which you will have done will gain in perspective. Now, it would not be nearly so valuable if there was some expert, some anthropologist, or some Hopi Indian, or someone who really knows all the material to the nth degree, to give some kind of very sophisticated understanding of the form. These are vegetation cycles, and et cetera, et cetera. And then your contribution would look to your own self as very naive and out of proportion and out of place. But having the entire cycle recounted in just the same mode by individuals like yourselves who never looked at it before, know very little about it. It'll all be in the same proportion. It'll be in the same key. And so there'll be a composition. And we'll all have the same tone. And that's what we're after. We're after to convince ourselves that starting from scratch and with a certain kind of hermetic quality of question, that we can engage circles of learning and spirals of growth and infinities of reality as we are. We don't have to wait for an expert. We don't have to wait until we have all the information in the universe. We can just begin at any time and anywhere and form a path. And hopefully, if we see that this can be done for the Book of Hopi, that we will begin to see that we're doing a very similar thing with this big book. I can't tell you how many people have owned this book for years and years and have read about one page or two pages because they feel trepidation of who am I to try to understand all of this. And the fact is that that's wasting this wonderful work. And it's wasting all those wonderful work which we count ourselves out of having it faster to experience simply because we don't really have confidence that we would have some way of addressing ourselves to it. We don't have all those degrees. We don't have that genius. We don't have that scope. We don't have that time. As the Bhagavad Gita shows, the rationalizing mind has an infinity of good arguments of why not to do it. It will never run out of excuses, and they are all beautiful excuses. And so we do the old thing. You know, Hermes was a thief before he was a wise messenger of the gods, and the thing to do is to go and steal back your life, steal back your perspective, get outside of the jail. Yeah.
I have a daughter who's in Clinton, and I gave her the big edition of the book, which is a red leaf today from law school.
Yeah.
She's now just taking the letter off. It was curious to compliment her.
Yeah.
And I gave it to her at the end of the first year because I said, I know you have things, but I said, it needs to be in the house because the people that will be coming in and out, they're going to see it and ask about it.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to set the hat off people because that book is big. It's different enough to try to rest in the rest. What's that? You'll find it in the house. He's married now and he has a stepson. He was fascinated with the book, 12 years old, looking at the pictures, and he already used it for a report from school, and for his 13th birthday, I just gave him the paperback.
He
was autographed to it. He was so thrilled. When I realized that a boy that age, these are some children we have coming in, and I know how intimidated adults are, a 13-year-old, and whether he's looking for anything that they can take it or not, for a thing. And with the information on that, what can you report to school?
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's excellent. I saw that two reading introduction. Some of you people, have you exhausted those? Some of you started with a person and some started with a tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, we've been talking about the theater, reminds me of my talking to the theater of the deaf, because it just so happened I looked at the pages and I have the longest, most complex ceremony of all in terms of the written word. Are you expecting overview or condensation of that, or are you expecting, or is it acceptable to zero in on one aspect, or exactly how to, with a minimum of time,
right,
my study of this fitting to be something that's going to be the core of the group?
Right. And my exact answer to that is that I have no mental picture whatsoever of what you should do, that whatever it is that you do will be just right.
Even if it is just
however,
an aspect.
Absolutely. Just to show you that this is the way in which the hermetic spiraling works, before this meeting, last week, no one was here that was doing Palamo. And as I was coming out, someone said, no one's doing Palamo. Shall I do it? And I said, no, don't do it. Because if no one is there to do it, we want to learn that too. We're ready to learn whatever it is that is there, in whatever form that it's going to manifest. Because the important thing is that we don't understand what these ceremonies are, but we begin to get a glimpse of what it is that we are doing. And what we are doing is we are putting together our experience with others, forming views, simple things like that. And we can call them by much more sophisticated things. But we're exploring. And we're developing a field of inquiry. We're trying to enrich it with as many things as we can. And occasionally we'll begin to observe that this is meaningful. Out of this means arises. And it rises, I think the old image is, just as if it were a flower in sun that rises up, and suddenly you have the image of a flower. Not a mental picture of it, but an image of a flower, that something has opened. Something has become meaningful. And sure enough, within 5 minutes or an hour or a day, something happens in our external lives that confirm that to us. And we begin to say, wait a minute. What, is this a script? Is this a plan? How come? How come this happens over and over again? The fact is that all of these traditions speak the truth. They're all true. It always happens exactly as they say. It's just that we have a view here of 10 to 12,000 years of worldwide human history, and we only live 60 or 70 years, so we only experience, have enough time to experience a little bit of it. But if we experience the whole full cycle like this, it is as if we have lived 10 or 12,000 years, because it brings back into our realm, just like Moby Dick creates the reality. We recreate all those realities for ourselves. And we get the kind of statement that Goethe once said, that a person isn't ready to be civilized until they're 5 or 6,000 years old. Life has got too many problems. It takes that long to figure out decent ways to get out of things, much less what to do. Suspend it, but don't write it off. Just mark it with unknown. Mm-hmm. It's all right to have unknown. I would encourage you people not to read the American Indian symbolism. Save that for the end. Save that for the end. For those who have read on people, starting with the person oriented, I think the thing to do is to move up to something which will challenge you. The whole section, starting with CX111, we're starting with 113. This is about the Kabbalah and the secret doctrine of Israel. And there should be four sections that end with the tarot. Fundamentals of Kabbalistic ceremony. The tree of the Sephiroth, Kabbalistic creation to the keys of man, and analysis of the tarot cards, five sections. Those five sections, read in that sequence. Those who have started with the person, I have to put this up for you, start with the Mystic Christianity, which is CLXXVII, that's 177, Mystic Christianity, and on through the cross and crucifixion, not the mystery of the apocalypse. Those two, and then come up here to the section on flowers and insects, and this is it. Fishes, insects, animals, reptiles, and birds. These are the natural phenomena, starting with 85, and there should be about three or four sections of that. 85, part 1 and 2, that's 89. Flowers, plants, fruits, and trees. You want to have that natural image there. Stone, metal, and gems. And don't go into ceremonial magic. Up through the grail and the magic of metals and gems. Now the reason that, just to emphasize this, it's very difficult for a lot of people to apprehend. The reason why we don't have sophisticated, written, typed up lectures and mending material is that that's not what we're after. Well, we have it here in a beautiful form. We're trying to develop an exploration dynamic by which we may go in and play in these fields of information and find out. That's what we don't have. We already have the book. The information has always been available throughout most of our lifetime. We're trying to get to it. And it's difficult to get to it. In fact, and I'm sure Mr. Hall would smile, it's almost as if we backed ourselves into a corner in this century where it's more difficult to get to what already is there than to get the information developed in the first place. The problem 100 years ago was what to know. And now the problem is how to get ourselves to what there is that we do know. It's a different problem. And it's also one that's more illusion-prone. That is, we fall prey to a game called the game of parentheses, where we're constantly thinking that, well, this is the case, and we're in control of that, where, as a matter of fact, we are not, and then we try to enlarge our perspective, again, by making a larger set of parentheses to take in the realization that those are not quite adequate. And this kind of process happens time and time again. For instance, any logical system, like a computer program or a logic, any logical system that grows expressive enough, has enough elements in it to be able to actually say something meaningful instead of yes or no and so forth, outdistances its own capacity to prove itself, so that you have to have an auxiliary system in order to make sure that if the first system's axiomatic basis is true and valid. And so constantly you're finding that the logical systems, as soon as they become useful, have outstripped their capacity to be rational, in the strict sense of the word. And this is a typical, natural function of the egotistical mind. As soon as we're big enough to control a segment of the world, we have already lost touch with the very basis which would permit us to control anything at all. We have the case in point. To some, I suppose this will just be of interest. And to others, I think it will begin to ring the bell. I have a few images here. Do we have time for it? Or do you want to just adjourn? What I've done here, symbolical journey, that is using a symbolic vision to look back on our experience, not so much in retrospect, but as we're living it, is a very difficult thing to get used to. And it requires a knack of seeing. And so I've brought in constantly different examples to augment what we're already doing. And I have two examples here. I have an example from Japan, and I have an example from England. And the example from Japan is 6 or 7 slides from Hirosugi Tokaido series. And Tokaido was the road from Tokyo to Kyoto. And it used to be, it was the road like between what we would say, in terms of importance, between New York and Washington, D.C., the largest city and the capital city. So it was a major thoroughfare. But the peculiar thing is, on one hand, Hiroshige was the last great landscape artist in the Orient. He died in 1858, and Japan modernized right after that. So that Hiroshige's images, even though they're only about 100 years old, 130 years old, look to us like medieval images, because of Japan, within 10 years, Japan is already changing, and within 50, Hiroshige's images were quaint beyond description. But the important thing is he had no pretensions philosophically. He simply was trained to record things as they are. And so we have an artist who gives us natural images of a symbolical journey without any kind of interference with something that he would like us to see. He just presents it as it really was. And in a very peculiar way, because once This is one way to see Melville's test, art creativity. It's not just a fiction. If you look at Hiroshige images for several hours, immerse yourself in it, look at them for long minutes intently and study them, and walk outside, you begin to see with his eyes. And for a couple of minutes, it's almost an incredible thing that you're looking with Hiroshige's eyes at nature. Because the eye, in the act of seeing, composes. One of our great photographers in this country is Edward West. And he said, composition is the strongest way of seeing. And when we really do experience and really do see, we have an artistic sense of composing while we see. We look, and in the looking, see. The process of shaping and the thing see. And this is why you find the empathy in people who have done long years of meditation or long years of contemplation on a simple life, because there's so much quality in the very act of seeing and doing that they have no need to jump up the vision of them. The simple realm, the closed universe. The second thing that I have in here is William Blake, towards the end of his life. He's a great visionary. I've mentioned him several times here. One of these times we'll do a course and bring in Blake. But he was a talented youngster. And he saw spiritual visions before he was a teenager. And his parents, although they didn't have much money, realized that they had an unusual child, so they sent him to art school. And at that time, the emphasis was not on painting, but on a practical art. So he learned the art of engraving. He was going to be an engraver of watches and things like that. But in order to learn the art of engraving, he was apprenticed from age 16 to 21 to a man who had a commission to produce a series of plates, several hundred plates, on Westminster Abbey. And so this talented, visionary teenager was put into Westminster Abbey for 5 long years to engrave in detail every aspect of it. And of course, Westminster Abbey is just the most mystical kind of a place, its architecture. And while Blake was there in his 21st year, they unearthed the tomb of Edward the Confessor, the last king of ancient England before the Normans took over. And when they raised the sarcophagus top, there was a cloth in, side, almost like the Shroud of Turin, that when they peeled it back, it had an image of Edward the Confessor on it. And of course, William Blake was right there, and no one could tell him for the rest of his life that a spiritual being doesn't impress reality with a negative image. So that if that's true, then anything that you engrave here and backwards and it prints out right on the page is real, spiritually real, and therefore we can tell ourselves things about the spirit through artists as mediums. almost as if he were an 18th century tenement. Towards the end of his life, he tried to illustrate the great symbolical journey that of Dante, Dante's Divine Comedy. But Blake, unfortunately, was very old. He didn't live long enough. And most of his illustrations to Dante are what we would call sketches. But that's all to our advantage, because we can see in the sketches the kinds of things that we ourselves might do. They're doodles, they're sketches, but they are images which reverberate. We've seen them in our dreams, we've seen them in visions ourselves, and there they are. And there's something peculiar about them. And it's this quality, the Hiroshige and William Blake, the Tokaido journey or Dante's journey, when you put that into parallel with something like Moby Dick or the Book of Hopi and the Tao Te Ching and Mr. Hall's big book, all of these cycles, and you realize that ourselves is the focus there of bringing these qualities out. You find yourself standing in line in the supermarket, and suddenly, instead of looking at the price of something, different kinds of thoughts, different kinds of qualities, the perceptions start coming. You start looking through the plate glass of a window, and you see the crescent moon looking like Isis' crown. Well, that's called beginning to wake up. And the more you do, the more you see, because we're just literally surrounded, immersed in an ocean of meaning, which is there all the time. And eventually we have that vision, and I think for the last slide in here is Blake's vision in Paradiso of the woman in paradise who is in this chariot. And the chariot's method of moving is a whirlwind of spiritual forms that are mainly eyes. And that's the way that a spiritual image would move, in a chariot that has a whirlwind of eyes, which we are. It's a wonderful, beautiful way of speaking. So we have much time. Let's see what we can see. On the always there's a companion. The straightness of the straight outer stay is the quality of a spiritual balance with being invited, and the fan open is a spectrum of his capacity to manifest that. And those walking the other way are struggling against the wind, and the tight flying within the stream below is like an accent of the dynamic of that well-balanced travel on the roof. It's a very simple image, and yet when you begin talking about it, when the angle between the curve of the tight string and the bridge curving, and those are sort of complementary, almost mirror-like images of parking, and the lake in the background is like the mirror, you can talk forever. You can develop incredible geometry between. The typical thing, I put the bees out because one of the images in here is very much like Jumbo, image of Moby Dick in the book. There are all these wonderful mountains. And we can see the train of people on the right nestled in until they almost took the part of the color of nature. Man really belongs. He fits into the quilting of the natural horizon, so that he blends in. And the object here of the most interest is that which is presented in a negative form. And that is that white ice cream cone type shape. That's not too beyond. And it's by far the highest thing in this cutting. It's almost invisible in the back. And in this same way, Moby Dick constantly looms, suspended in the book, in the symbolical journey. Just the way it looms in this series of print. here again, nestling in human beings, looking at each other, it's almost blended in. Kamiyama, can you hear that? And we can, I'll have to go back to the future of time. So looking at the background, your eyes can roll along in the foreground of constantly, the questions of fortune and destiny come up. And of course, the phenomenon of composing while journeying. And here the, and realize the synchronicity of Halloween. And that, here's an interesting phenomenon that, maybe the Fuji has completely ready to fly. Is that it? No, it's flying. Is that it? They make you know, I mentioned Halloween, it's really interesting. You can't help it. When you're doing things right, it always works. And so, you give up complaining, finally. I know it seems impossible to survive my reminder day, but it's too colorful and beautiful for you. You need to have. But see how the moon has risen up and said that the whole notion of life white Fuji has transcended the horizon itself, and very often the moon is thought of in that way. It's like in him that risen free under the night, under the blue. This was when somebody asked Blake, the person who was like to draw his teacher, and he said that I think it's a spiritual teacher. And I wouldn't invite you living in London, but this was a psychological presentation, an artistic rendering, and a spiritual vision. Okay, this is just a series of sketches. These are images of symbolical dreams. I'll just go through them and you can you see the point that even if in sketch form, we have a better chance to adjust ourselves to them. Somehow, like those stars in the sky, we can say that the space is between the ink on the page, but if there's something stirring that out of the space and reverberating in them. Just as we see all these sketches and these different images, when reading through an older deck, no film also sketches for a constant. He'll give us images of the will and constitution. And they're not different. They're to help us acclimate ourselves to that will. He'll give us images of people and truth. Images of their relationship to the tree. And then there are constitutions, deeper meaning. Like maybe this that comes before from time to time and finally beginning down. And those symbols begin to be ordinary. In terms of meaning, the image base that we've been learning and inventing and directing. And the direction takes the development. Development to be called a journey. You can never remember that. And this too, I'm sorry to go over into. This barely sees our next sketch, the final sketch, where we kind of bring in the Blake Jacob ladder, the wonderful, full of colored print. These were all done by Richard Huntsman, as you know, about the time that movie did its set. And of course, Blake and Delta were both what we call old specimens that are being taken down in this time. And you can say for them, an old specimen of a Bible making fundamental source of spiritual information. And you can say, you can use metaphors, like some people prefer using metaphors, they were listed by the light flames, the qualifying the landscape, and making a theme like later, or somehow this is a dream vision, linking back to this or that. All that should be suspended. All that kind of jargon, all that kind of metaphor should be suspended and set aside. Yes, yes, possible, yes, interesting. But the basic quality is on to that which immediately is what is there, and just see that. Because we want to keep in our field of inquiry, our directed apprehension of ideas, meaning if we have something else that's coming out, and not just an understanding of what somebody else would understand. But rather than unknown, this is our own understanding, we say yes to person, and he stays as a person. And the last one, of course, this wonderful symbol, from the Hopi Indians, and the Navajo Indians, I've been looking. This is a design which traditionally was placed inside a basket. And I've been looking all over Los Angeles to find a Navajo basket that has it in, and nobody has one, oddly enough. But I have several friends scouring collections, and hopefully, before this course is over, I'll bring it in. This is the most masterful presentation of the ethical discovery that there is nothing in particular at the center of it all, but that the center is engendered by virtue of the paths taken, the forces brought into play, and the structures and qualities are able